ever get the feeling that everything's completely fucked up?
Oh, I don't know. Is it that we collectively thought Steve Jobs was a great man, even when we knew he made billions off the backs of children? Or maybe it's that it feels like all our heroes are counterfeit. The world itself's just one big hoax. Spamming each other with our running commentary bullshit, masquerading as insight. Our social media faking as intimacy. Or is it that we voted for this? Not with our rigged elections, but with our things, our property, our money. I'm not saying anything new. We all know why we do this. Not because Hunger Games books makes us happy, but because we want to be sedated. Because it's painful not to pretend. Because we're cowards.
And it is a good day. This is Maltos reporting to you from the internet for Sunday, February the 28th, 2016. And you're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening in and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow along and check our facts by going to newsreel.ca. This is a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk each and every Sunday afternoon at 1400 hours Pacific Time. We also record live every Thursday night at 1730 hours Pacific Time on Mumble. If you go to the newsreel.ca website, just click on the Participate tab at the top of the page, and there you'll find the instructions for getting onto the Mumble server. And with us tonight are nobody, because this week I am running solo, and as a result, I am not broadcasting on Mumble. And I was asked about that, why I do not broadcast live on Mumble when I'm running solo. And that's because it's a Thursday night and my wife is here, and usually I have to lock her in the bedroom while Sean and I, or Circuit and I, record Newsreel, which kind of sucks. When when you're married, you kind of don't, you know, just shut your wife away. Running solo, I just do it the next day when she's at home. So it's a little bit better, and you know, she doesn't go crazy, I don't go crazy, everything's good. Anyways, like I said before, Circuit is not with us this week. He was really busy on Thursday night, so we couldn't record, with work and whatnot. So we'll forgive him this time. So other than that, my week is pretty boring, as usual. I seem to have picked up a new stalker, which is actually kind of disturbing. Other than that, you know, things are good. But without further ado, I'll just jump into the news here, because I don't want to bore anyone with my boring week. So then to the news, the first little bit of news we have here is in Play Nice News. And actually, this is from Circuit. It sent this in. British Army instructors are told to stop swearing at new recruits. Yeah, okay. It says here, British Army instructors are being told to tone down their swearing following a Newsbeat documentary. I'm assuming Newsbeat is a BBC program or something, because this is off of the BBC website, this one here. So, anyways, civilians to soldiers follows new recruits going through the training process from the day they join up to the day that they pass out. To the day they pass out, like from the training being too rigorous, or the day that they pass out being like the day that they get out? Probably the latter. Newsbeat's been told that the language used by some personnel is now a sensitive issue. Oh no. The Ministry of Defense has told us that it does not condone the use of abusive or insulting language towards recruits. There's some links there, but who cares about those? Newsbeat understands that there are meetings being held this week to discuss how language is used, and instructors will be told to tone things down. Enforcing any sort of change in policy will be hard for them, and the Ministry of Defense insists that it isn't about to ban swearing in the British Army completely. And even if they did, good luck with that. Newsbeat's been told that there are now worries within the Army about how that sort of behavior could put people off from signing up. Would it really be the swearing that you'd be worried about, or more the, the intense physical training that you'd have to go with, boot camp and whatnot? Honestly, for a person like me, I could really give a shit less about the swearing. I mean, I'm swearing right now. But it's more like I'm a freaking toothpick, and I got problems with one of my arms. So you know, I can't really, I mean, I could do a lot of hardcore physical stuff probably, but you know, as far as push-ups go and stuff, I mean, my left arm would just seriously fall off. I have nerve damage, so that's kind of a big put off for me. I really care less if somebody's swearing. I mean, people sworn at me my entire life. I've sworn back at people my entire life, you know, family, friends, bosses, everything. Swearing, so they're just words. If you are going to be taking offense to the words that are coming out of somebody's mouth, especially if they're, you know, you're training you, how are you going to take, you know, being shot out by the enemy or or something? You know what I mean? I think one's a little bit worse than the other, and one's there to condition you while the other one is, you know, trying to kill you. Kind of a difference, right? Like sticks and stones may break my bones, names will never hurt me. Like, whatever happened to that crap? Anyways, it says here that the Army needs more people, more young people specifically. Its own figures show that it has fallen below the required number of troops for 9 out of the last 10 years. So a lot less people are wanting to sign up. Probably because they're all attached to their smartphones. Insert picture of guys there with a SATCOM antenna. Yay. Through drill, physical training, exercises, and inspections, the Newsbeat documentary filmed last year shows what modern Army training is all about. It's a tough 14 weeks that not everyone can handle. In one scene, a corporal is seen screaming at the recruits, "Seriously, I ask you to do one, I guess that means fucking thing, it was to do that fucking list on the board which I had the kindness to write down for you lot. Well, that didn't work. Right now, you have got to be fucking raging. Mr. Blah Blah Blah, nice guy, is not coming back." I guess I have no idea what the hell's going on with that. And an Army spokesperson said it's a long-held policy that the British Army does not condone the use of abusive or insulting language towards its recruits. Right. So, so it's their policy, like for a long time, according to this, that hey, you know, you're not supposed to yell at recruits, or you're not supposed to swear at them, or use abusive language, whatever. You know what? Honestly, you're there to be trained. There's a reason why military training is the way it is. Honestly, yeah, you know, the language could be toned down a little bit. Yeah, and there's certain people that could do that. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you know, I need you to fix this right now. Okay, or I need you to fix this or whatever. Okay, blah, 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 blah. Is there a sense of urgency there? No, not really. However, if you say, hey, motherfucker, I need you to fix this fucking thing right fucking now. It, you know, the whole use of swear words and abusive words and whatnot kind of, you know, puts a little bit of emphasis on things like, hey, yeah, it'd be nice to have it done now versus get the fucking thing done right now. Like, it should have been done like 5 days ago. Let's do this now. You know, you're supposed to follow orders. You know, it might not be the best. You know, honestly, if you're out in the field, like on an operation or a mission or something like that, and your team, your squad, your fire team, whatever the hell you're part of, I don't know. I'm not military, so fuck it. But let's say you're taking fire, you're pinned down and stuff, and you know your person in command of you there, commanding officer, whatever, is like, hey, get the fuck over there, get this fucking guy's. But you know, if you're pinned down and stuff, you're probably not going to be caring about how you're speaking to others. And honestly, it doesn't really matter. So you got to think of it this way: military training. What are you training for? You're training to go fight other people, possibly even kill those other people. You know, it's not always going to be like, you know, butterflies and daisies and picnics and rainbows and shit. You're going to be taking fire. You know, like, who fucking cares what you're saying? Get the information out there, place the urgency on it, go from there. If people are joining up and they cannot handle it, they cannot stomach this shit, then I'm sure Circuit would be just going crazy bonkers over the story right now. And I'm pretty sure that's why he sent it in. But, you know, you're training for a certain reason. You have to put up with shit. It's not always going to be easy. Same with language. People aren't always going to use the best language with you. You know, you just learn to deal with it. You suck it up. That's part of the training. You kind of build up defenses against, you know, physical defenses, emotional defenses, and everything like that. I mean, your drill sergeant or your commanding officer or whatever probably doesn't have any bad tendencies towards you. He probably doesn't hate you. But he's doing this for your benefit. It's like your parents back in the day. Maybe they spanked you or something, or hit you when you did something bad, or when you said the wrong thing to the wrong person or something like that. Does that mean that they don't, you know, love you? Well, you know, not like your drill sergeant loves you, but you know, it doesn't mean that your parents do not love you and that they're abusing you. It's just kind of like a corrective thing, right? So maybe it kind of goes like that. I don't know, but this is pretty stupid in my opinion. Let's just let the drill instructors swear. That's what they do. Okay? Into the next story. I have to move everything around here. There we go. In Robot Overlord News, thank you to Exec and April Chang for this article. Boston Dynamics has created the most human humanoid robot yet. And that would be the Atlas. There's a whole bunch of crap here that I gotta read through. Anyways, insert picture of the Atlas right there. Boston Dynamics, the Google-owned company that is famous for creating Big Dog, we all know about him, robot cheetahs, and the Atlas humanoid robot, has released a new version of their bipedal marvel. Designed to operate outdoors and inside of buildings, the latest version of Atlas is specialized for mobile manipulation, so picking things up, I guess. Walking, maybe? Unlike its much heavier, noisier, and slower tethered Big Brother, this incredibly upgraded model of Atlas is electrically powered and hydraulically actuated. It uses sensors in its body and legs to balance and LiDAR, sexy, and stereo sensors in its head to avoid obstacles, assess the terrain, help with navigation, and manipulate objects. And it's a picture of Atlas, the new Atlas, I should say, picking up 10-pound boxes and bricks and stuff. Cool. With the caption, "Your job is next." Yes, probably. This version of Atlas weighs 180 pounds. Wow, that's fairly light. Anyways, this version of Atlas weighs 180 pounds and is about 5 feet 9 inches tall, which is about a head shorter than the version of the robot that was used by many teams at last year's DARPA Robotics Challenge. In the video below, you can watch Atlas walk through snowy woods untethered, practice at getting a warehouse job, take abuse from a hockey stick wielding boss, that probably won't end well, okay, and pick itself off the floor and walk out of the Boston Dynamics facility. Probably pissed off with the fact that he just got the shit used out of it. He's like, fuck this, I'm walking off the job, kiss my ass, motherfuckers. Seriously, the gulf between the robots featured in contemporary science fiction like Chappie and the stuff coming out of Boston Dynamics does not seem that far apart anymore. It is amazing how far the robot has been developed in the past 3 years. And there's a video of it there, and it's walking around, and again, you see the hockey stick stuff where he's getting pushed over and knocked on his face and all that stuff. So, very cool, and check that stuff out. And I believe I actually have that in Rec Media this week. If not, I will put it in there. Into article number 3. In the Mad Men Are Mad News. Thank you to Exec for this one. And I must say, this is the Exec show this week because nobody else sent anything in for articles except for April Chang, which has been a long time since she has actually put stuff out. But there you go. So the Google show, or the Exec show, I should say. Anyways, Google and Yahoo clash with Blunt, which is an ad-blocking company, I guess. With Blunt ad-blocking company, Blunt in quotation marks. Google and Yahoo have accused ad-blocking software Shine of destroying the relationship between advertisers and consumers. Oh no! After an executive from the company called its solution a nuclear weapon threatening the industry. In a heated debate at Mobile World Congress on Tuesday, executives from Google and Yahoo clashed with Shine's chief marketing officer over ad blocking. Ad blocking software use grew over. Ad blocking software use grew 41% in the 12 months to August 2015. I guess leading up to August 2015. And there are now 198 million active ad block users around the world. I thought that number would have been a little bit higher, but it's whatever, it's quite a few people. According to Page Fair, whatever Page Fair is, no link on that. Ad blocking was estimated to cost advertisers $22 billion last year. Did it really cost them? No. It's supposed revenues that may have occurred if the ads weren't being blocked. Doesn't mean they're losing money because, they weren't making that anyway. Shine is the single biggest threat in the history of advertising. It is a stellar opportunity to reset the relationship with consumers, Roy Carthy, CMO of Shine Technologies, said. We are not against advertising. There is a misconception that Shine is against advertising. We do believe that new rules of engagement need to come about. Carthy claimed that consumers were being abused by advertising technology. In a survey conducted by Adobe of 260 adults, 42% of people said that they feel ad blocking improves the performance of their computer. Yeah, you got a lot less shit loading up. The survey also found that marketers have not worked out mobile advertising either. with many ads using too much data to load, thereby slowing down a device. The rise of the blocking software has caused backlash from advertisers, and particularly companies like Google and Yahoo, which rely heavily on revenues from advertising. Benjamin Faes, Managing Director of Media and Platforms at Google, called Shine's technology a blunt solution that punishes users and good advertisers. How the hell does it punish the user if the user puts, you know, installs it? But okay, whatever. It doesn't make any sense to me, but okay. And good advertisers. Well, yeah, sure, there's good advertisers, but, you know, whatever. Blocking all ads, I think, is diminishing. It's diminishing? Okay, well, let me start this again. This is worded weird. Blocking all ads, I think, is diminishing my experience of advertising, and in that case, we see an issue for the user themselves. That's a load of shit. More and more publishers just cannot afford to give their content out for free. Okay. A user with an ad blocker will keep running on websites who ask the user to pay for content, then they unblock the ad blocker, and then see all the bad ads go away, Faes said during the panel. I don't want to ruin that ecosystem. I'm really concerned by this black and white think, the Google executive added, suggesting that there needs to be a more nuanced approach to the issue. Ad blocking has gained the support of some major technology giants. However, last year, screw it up here. Anyways, ad blocking has gained. Where did I go? Let me just increase the size of this so I can actually read the damn thing. Yes, they have gained support of some of the major technology giants, however. Last year, Apple announced that Safari on iOS 9 would have ad blocking capabilities. Meanwhile, Shine has struck key deals with mobile operators. Caribbean carrier Digicel announced last year that it would roll out Shine's ad blocking software across its networks. And European carrier 3 said it would also implement the technology this year. But Yahoo said that solution would punish good advertising and ruin the relationship between consumer and advertiser. You're blocking at a network level, but actually at a publisher or property level, some ads are very good, and if you block every one of them, you completely destroy the value exchange and the ecosystem. Nick Hugh, Vice President and General Manager of Advertising for EMEA at Yahoo, said. In a tense exchange between the executives, Carthy stepped up the rhetoric, claiming that tech companies were using military-grade tracking, targeting, and profiling of users, and his solution is sending a very clear signal that this was not right. He said Shine wanted new rules of engagement between consumers and advertisers. Carthy did not stop there, likening Shine to a nuclear weapon facing the advertising industry, a remark Yahoo's Hugh dismissed as a bit dramatic. The trio did not resolve the differences, but Google and Yahoo both talked about what they are doing to combat the rise of ad blocking. Google said that its accelerated mobile pages feature, which allows people to create stripped-down web pages to load faster, will help advertisers get their ads seen more. Okay. Now, going through this here. I can understand that some advertising is quote-unquote good advertising. Now, this would be stuff for like on sites. Like if I am going to go and buy, I don't know, some outdoor equipment. Let's say I'm on outdoorequipment.ca or what, I don't know, some random company here. If there's an advertisement on that site for their products and stuff, that's one thing. It's on their site, it's for their products and stuff. And that's, I'm on their site looking for their products in the first place, I'm going to be buying their stuff. If maybe I see that up there, it's advertising for something that I'm not aware of or something that might interest me, then that's fine, that's cool. Now you get stuff where you go into like YouTube, you go there and you have, you know, these ads playing before you watch a video. So let's say you're watching a video on, let's say the same thing, like an outdoor gear review, and all of a sudden you get an advertisement for like a Lexus car or some car or some product that has absolutely nothing to do with what you're actually watching and stuff. That is, well, that'd be malicious advertising, really. It's advertising in your space, and you're trying to get information on something else, and you get information about something completely unrelated instead, before. So it's a diversion. Don't need that crap. There's other examples about that, though, too. And yes, ad blocking does kind of block the good ads, you know, in this case, but it does block the bad ads, and really, who cares? Because advertising is destroying your soul, as we all know. And these people just want to make money. So I don't know. I think that everyone should run ad blockers. And actually, I've run into this issue recently. I've been putting up all the episodes of Patrolling on my YouTube channel. Just has been another backup going on. And I find that, you know, most of the music on there is, you know, got copyrights and stuff on it, like the intro and outro songs and the songs in the background and stuff. And YouTube, of course, picks up on that crap. So it says, you have to, you know, agree to this, and it's copyright information and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, I want the stuff up there, so I'm going to click yes. Right. It's okay, fine. Even though everything is in the credits, you know, all the music and whatnot, the bands and stuff are all credited. And stuff, which is fine, so that's good, the information's there and whatnot. At the same time, it's like, it does tell you that if you agree to this, that because there is copyrighted music on there, that Google will advertise on those videos, which sucks and is kind of stupid. Unless it's advertising for the bands, that kind of makes sense, but if it's not, which it probably isn't, then that's pretty fucked up. So an ad blocker, you know, I run, you know, AdBlock Plus, like probably a lot of us do. It actually blocks all that crap out of there, so I don't have to see it. I'm assuming everyone else is going to be watching this, or watching Patrolling anyways, on my channel. We'll probably have AdBlock installed. I'm going to put a little disclaimer on the bottom of all those freaking videos. Hey, if you're watching this, don't forget to install an ad blocker on your machine, just so that you're not getting bombarded by all this shit that you don't need. So, that's it for that article there. Segue off of that into the next article in space news. This is by me, I guess. NASA scientist: I can get humans to Mars in a month. No known reason why we cannot do this. And this is an article from Newser. Read less, no more. A short article. There's a video there of this guy Philip Lubin describing new proposed technologies. Awesome. Anyways, very quickly, a century ago, the first transatlantic flight took about 23 days. Transatlantic flight? Maybe it was, it doesn't say if it's a flight or anything else, it just says the first transatlantic, so maybe it was the first transatlantic, oh, I don't know, whatever. But soon we could reach Mars in about as long. The key is perfecting laser technology. NASA scientist Philip Lubin says that by swapping out the current fuel-based rocket propulsion system with one relying on photons, would significantly boost our space travel speeds, reports Reuters, whatever the name is. There's a link there for that. Science Alert, another link, explains it like this. Particles of light from lasers in Earth's orbit would reflect off of a large reflective sail on a spacecraft and produce a thrust capable of sending it toward a destination at insane speeds. Or ludicrous speeds! Lubin estimates a 220-pound probe could reach Mars in as little as 72 hours. Holy crap, reports Wired. There's a link there for that. A bigger manned spacecraft would take about a month. Yes, that's right, you heard correctly. 1 month, roughly, give or take, versus, what is it, 9 months now, or 10 months, or something stupid like that, or 70 months? I don't know how long it takes to get to Mars anymore. This is very cool. Experts believe that the space launch system currently in development could take humans to Mars in about 5 months. Wow. If all of that isn't intriguing enough, Lubin says that photonic propulsion opens up the possibility of travel outside of our solar system, per space.com. There's a link there for that. The human factor of exploring the nearest stars and exoplanets would be a profound voyage for humanity, one whose non-scientific implications would be enormous, Lubin writes in the study. Link there. There are recent advances that take this from science fiction to science reality. Okay. He adds in a YouTube video, which of course is right there. There is no known reason why we cannot do this. NASA says that there will be humans on Mars by the 2030s. And right now we could probably do that a lot earlier. So, very cool. I for one think that is a good thing to test out. I mean, rockets are expensive, fuel for the rockets is expensive, you're dropping parts off, you're losing, you know, how many millions of dollars of hardware sitting out there floating in orbit, or has already deorbited and burnt up, you know, between here and, well, Pluto, really. I mean, the furthest probe we have out there is Voyager 1 and 2, so, you know, I'm sure there's debris out around that area too, maybe not a lot, but we got a lot of shit floating around Earth just kind of in a dump, space dump, so. Be cool to have something like this, send it up, maybe unfold a big sail, fire it off, no propulsion systems, not a big propulsion system. Maybe you need to have like maneuvering jets, I would assume, or maybe like orbital insertion engines, or I don't know, something like that. But at the same time, a few months versus a lot more months? Sure, why not? Let's get this shit going. And then into the next article in Internet Security News. Thank you to Exec for this article here. This is from Engadget, from a few days ago. A critical security flaw affects nearly the entire internet. The DNS bug is so widespread that it could take years to patch. Oh, that's looking on the bright side then. An 8-year-old bug in the internet's domain name system, DNS, could be used to widely spread malware. And if it can, it probably has, according to security researcher Dan Kaminsky. He says a flaw found in the GNU, I'm going to say that's the new, C standard library, aka libc, can trick browsers into looking up shady domain names. Servers could then reply with overly long DNS names, causing a buffer overflow in the victim's software. That would in turn let hackers execute code remotely and possibly take over a machine. Awesome. Sorry. While the hole has already been patched, Kaminsky said that the buggy code has been around for quite some time, since about May 2008. So it's really worked its way across the globe. In other words, it could be ages for the fix to be applied broadly. Along with Heartbleed, Link Bear, and others, the bug is the latest of several serious flaws found in the backbone of the internet. Kaminsky pointed out that ironically, the latest hole was coded into GNU DNS libraries just months after he corrected other serious DNS flaws in 2008. He's advising anybody running Linux servers to patch this bug with extreme prejudice. Android devices aren't affected, by the way, is what it says there in brackets. Nobody is sure yet if the code can be executed remotely. However, Red Hat, which discovered the vulnerability along with Google, said that a back of the envelope analysis shows that it should be possible to write correctly formed DNS responses with attacker controlled payloads that will penetrate a DNS cache hierarchy and therefore allow attackers to exploit machines behind such caches. Right, which says that yes, this could be exploited and somebody could attack a machine and take it over. Right, that's what that says. However, the bug makes servers vulnerable to man in the middle attacks. Right now, if hackers gain access to certain servers, that makes it what Kaminsky calls a solid critical vulnerability by any normal standard. Now the only question is whether things will get much worse. So there's a little food for thought for you. So get all your shit patched, essentially, is what we're going with here for a solution to this problem. I don't know what else to say about that. Get all your shit patched. Get all the security patches going. Firewalls, all this other fun stuff. Get it going. Get it all set up. Would it be able to bypass a firewall if it's a DNS thing? I have no idea. I'm not a computer tech guy. I'm good with computers. Not so much the full end of the networking stuff. Or anything else, really. So, yay! This is more Circuits Area, and he's not here to comment on this, so into the next article we go. This is actually the last article for this week. This is going to be a very, very short episode. So far, we're at about 28 minutes. Holy crap. Wow, I'm going to have to start singing and stuff here for halftime. But in terrorism news, dun, 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 to Mark and Jack, ISIL, ISIS, whatever the hell you want to call these guys, threatens Facebook's Zuckerberg and Twitter's Dorsey in a new video. Insert picture of the two bastards there. This post has been updated, apparently, so it says at the top. The Islamic State has reportedly threatened Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter founder Jack Dorsey over the chief executive's efforts to combat terrorism on their social media platforms. In a 25-minute propaganda video, reportedly released on Wednesday, February the 24th, by a group of ISIL supporters called the Sons Caliphate Army. Yeah. Dorsey and Zuckerberg, the sons of what? What the hell? Dorsey and Zuckerberg are depicted alongside each other in bullet hole ridden images engulfed with flames. as shown in screenshots captured by a news site, Vocative. There's a link there for that, which discovered the video on the social media platform Telegram. And I'm going to try to see what this picture actually looks like, because it seems a bit interesting. Okay, so random grainy images of both them with the names. Facebook founder, Twitter founder. Bullet holes. Okay, that's pretty crappy, Photoshop work there, guys. Anyways, kind of funny, actually. But the video called Flames of the Supporters was also authenticated by Storyful. Click link there. A journalist at the company, which verifies news from the web, told Quartz, that's the website I'm reading from right now, that the video was authenticated based on where it was originally hosted and the platform of sharing that followed, sorry, the pattern of sharing that followed on social media. In the video, the group vows to retaliate against Facebook and Twitter over their counter-terrorism measures, which include taking down terror-affiliated accounts. Here is text from a screenshot transcribed by Quartz. So it goes like this. To Mark and Jack, founders of Twitter and Facebook, and to their crusader government, you announced daily that you suspended many of our accounts. And to you we say, is that all you can do? You are not in our league. If you close one account, we will take 10 in return, and soon your names will be erased after we delete your sites. Allah willing, and we'll know that we say... Allah willing, and we'll know that we say that what we say is true. Maybe they should learn how to type properly too. But the video also shows the group hacking into Facebook and Twitter accounts, changing profile pictures, and then posting propaganda to the platforms. It reportedly claims that ISIL has hacked more than 10,000 Facebook accounts and 5,000 Twitter profiles. ISIL has frequently turned to slick, sophisticated videos, link here, as part of their propaganda strategy, which is often spread through social media. Facebook and Twitter have faced criticism for their responses to terrorism-related content, there's a link there, in the past, and are vocal about their efforts to remove terrorist propaganda from their platforms. Well, yeah, I would be too. If I had a social media platform, or a news, like, let's say it's something like Rant Media, and people were putting shit up about, join the cause, and blah, 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 this, something that's kind of like, against what, you're supposed to be doing. Well, not what you're supposed to be doing, but, you kind of join up with, like, the Nazis, essentially. You're going to be deleting that shit. Or Nazis or anybody else, like ISIL or whatever. I'd be deleting that shit too, left, right, and center. Like, guaranteed. I don't want to have, shit like that on this service that I'm providing that is going out there to the masses as a recruitment tool. That's not, that's against, that's like treason almost if you think about it. These guys are based out of the States. Freedom of speech and all that stuff. Yes, that's true. Freedom of speech does factor in a lot of stuff. But at the same time, if you're recruiting terrorists on my website, I am going to shut you down. Like, come on. But the Facebook and Twitter have been criticized. I already read that part. From the platforms, Facebook has said that profiles, pages, and groups associated with terrorist organizations are banned, link there, from the site, and that any content condoning terrorist acts will be removed. Because again, we don't want to have terrorist acts. We want to have, things kind of run smoothly. Well, smoother than that anyways. And earlier this year, Twitter said it had suspended more than 125,000 accounts, link there, for threatening or promoting terrorist acts, the majority of which were related to ISIL. The company has been targeted by ISIL supporters before through tweets calling on people to assassinate both Dorsey and Twitter employees. There's links for those there. But they and other tech companies also have to balance increased anti-terrorism efforts with users' concerns over privacy and censorship and freedom of speech. The latest threats issued on Wednesday night came shortly after Facebook, Twitter, and dozens of other tech companies and advertising agencies met with the U.S. Justice Department to discuss how to fight extremist propaganda and recruitment efforts online. There's a link for all that stuff in there. Neither Facebook nor Twitter have released statements in response to the video. Both companies told Quartz that they would not comment on it. It says here, updated February 25th, 12:38 p.m. ET, Eastern Time, I guess. This post was updated to include responses from Storyful, Twitter, and Facebook, which replied to Quartz's inquiries after the story was initially published. Okay. Random Donald Trump picture there. Haha, funny. But, yeah, I mean, you got guys like, oh, blah, blah. You know what this sounds like? This sounds like ISIL, or ISIS, whatever, Islamic State, whatever the hell you want to call these bastards, are essentially taking a page out of Anonymous's operating procedures, right? Oh, if you kill this one site, you know, 10 more will pop up in its place. Or, like, you know, Hail Hydra, you know, you chop one head off, and more pop up, or whatever, blah, 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 all that shit. Yeah. Anyways, just copycat shit, swinging around, or, well, bad shit, because I do not want to be living in an Islamic world. Well, not to say there's anything wrong with Islam, I do not want to be living in a world that is run by an Islamic or any religious extremist, for that matter. I had to correct myself on that, because you can't just go general and broad on that, you have to get a little bit more specific. But, yeah, so... I don't know, not really what makes exactly be a bad thing. Maybe Zuckerberg did die. I mean, I don't know, Facebook is kind of a bastard company and all that stuff, and Twitter is more or less getting that way too, if it isn't already. But at the same time, I mean, Islamic State is just full of shit. So, fuck them. Yes, Islamic State, you heard me. Go fuck yourselves. Yeah, every one of you. But there we go for the news articles this week. Anyways, into weekly hacks, we got two of them. We have the first one from Exec, 100 Best Free PC Tools. This includes, create your perfect Windows toolkit with these apps. You got page one is system health tools, page two is desktop customization tools, page three, cleanup and stabilization tools, and page four is Windows security tools. So it's got stuff like Crystal Disk Monitor, FixWin, Partition Wizard, Microsoft Fixit Center, CPU-Z, which is actually a good program to run. I have that on my phone, actually. SpeedFan, all these, you know, a lot of these things we know of. Some of these we probably do not know of, so definitely take a look at those. Very, very handy to have, because, you know, if you're running a PC, things do happen. Second thing is Ricochet. And actually, Circuit sent this one in. Ricochet is the most secure peer-to-peer encrypted messenger that sends no metadata. I'll read the whole thing here. If I can get this friggin' thing out of the way. Shit, there we go. There are several encrypted messaging apps for mobile and desktop app. Let me start that all over again here, folks. There are several encrypted messaging apps for mobile and desktop platforms that shipped with the most secure tagline. But they end up in the de-anonymizing the real identity of its users in some or another way. In fact, very few encrypted messaging apps available today deal with the core problem of metadata. The majority of apps offer end-to-end encryption that kept the content of your messages away from prying eyes, but your metadata will still be accessible to them, which is enough to know who you really are and who you're talking to. So as long as you can get past the encryption, you can find this stuff out. But one messenger app stands out from the crowd by providing superb anonymity to its users, and it's dubbed as Ricochet. Ricochet is a peer-to-peer instant messaging system available for Windows, Mac, and Linux, and you can trust it as the app has already cleared its first professional security audit, and there's a link there for that, carried out by cybersecurity company NCC Group. So what's so promising about Ricochet? Insert picture of, I'm assuming that's Ricochet. Right there, yes it is. Unlike other encrypted messaging clients, Ricochet makes use of Tor hidden services in an effort to maintain its users' anonymity. With the help of hidden services, a user's traffic never leaves the Onion router, never leaves the Tor network, which makes it much harder for prying eyes or any attacker to see where the traffic is going or coming from. Peer-to-peer connection, no servers, no operators. Ricochet does not trust anyone in maintaining the privacy of its users, thus, the developers have implemented their app with no server or operator support that could be compromised, exposing your personal details. The concept with Ricochet is, how can we do messaging without any server in the middle, without trusting anything to forward your messages to your contacts? John Brooks, Ricochet's programs maintainer, stated. That turns out to be exactly one of the problems that hidden services can solve, to contact someone without anybody in the middle knowing who you are or who you're contacting. Here's how Ricochet works. Ricochet supports cross-platform messaging and whatnot, and it's very easy to use even for non-technical users. So it shows here, username, a unique .onion address. Every Ricochet client hosts a Tor hidden service. And once you sign up for Ricochet, that is actually your Ricochet ID, a unique .onion address. Only the one with this .onion address can contact you and send messages, which means the contacts connect to you through Tor and not through any intermediate server, making it extremely harder, or more difficult, I should say, for anyone to know your real identity from your address. Ricochet creates huge spike in hidden addresses, in unique .onion addresses. Security researcher Alan Woodward has noticed an unprecedented spike in the number of unique .onion addresses, or hidden addresses, on the Tor network in the month of February. The statistics, link right there for that, shared by the Tor project shows that the number of unique .onion sites has increased by more than 25,000 within 2 to 3 days. Wow. Researcher believed that this sudden rise could be due to the popularity of Ricochet that creates unique .onion addresses for every registered user. Your messages end-to-end encrypted by default. Besides this, Ricochet also encrypts the contents of your messages by default. So to start chatting with someone over Ricochet, you should first know their unique ID that is being auto-generated at the time of their installation of Ricochet. Moreover, you have a buddy and say, hey, I want to talk to you on this. Like, okay, here's my user address or whatever. Da-da-da-da. Punch that, you're talking. That's how you do it. So there you go. So probably you don't want to be sending that over. Hey, I want to talk to you on Ricochet. Oh, okay, let me just text message you this or email you this. No, don't do that, because that would be bad. That would defeat the purpose of this. I believe. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I don't know. So, moreover, once connection is terminated by either the sender or the receiver, the remaining party would not be able to communicate or send messages to the other. Ricochet takes your security seriously. The audit by NCC Group discovered a security flaw that could be exploited to de-anonymize users. But the good news is that the issue has been resolved in the latest release, which is Ricochet 1.1.2. The security vulnerability was independently discovered by a member of the Ricochet community. Ricochet has been around since 2014. Yeah, I think this is the first time I've heard about it. Or maybe it's not, and I don't know. And is now far more secure, I guess, than any other existing encrypted messaging apps. But the app is still in the dogfooding stage. What the fuck is dogfooding stage? Okay, early stages of development, maybe? As Brooks referred to in the Be Careful statement, link right there for that, on the project's official website. Ricochet is an experiment. Security and anonymity are difficult topics, and you should carefully evaluate your risks and exposure with any software. Download now, of course. Why wouldn't you? Brooks has already made the option to report the vulnerabilities publicly. Currently, the app runs on the desktop platforms, including Windows, Mac, and Linux. And we could expect the mobile version of the app coming soon in the future. You can download Ricochet for your desktop here, and there's a link there for that. And as for now, Brooks is looking to get funding from the open source community, for the further development of Ricochet itself, such as implementing a file sharing feature. So that is very cool. I'm going to take a look at that. I'm going to talk to Circuit about that too, I think. Because as we all know, Circuit's kind of hardcore about the encryption and all that stuff, as you know, we really all should be, about as interested in it as he is. Unfortunately, a lot of us aren't. I'm kind of the here and there on it. But we probably should be working on something like this, or maybe something custom. Hey, Circuit, if you're listening, a custom program, or any other WODs listening, a custom encrypted program for the WODs would be pretty awesome, pretty bang on here. Right, just putting that out there. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So that's that for the weekly hacks. In Cyberpunk Kit, we have two things here. First one is the Star Wars droid. Let me go back up the top here. There we go. Star Wars droid translator helmets. And I have it listed as, let's mod this shit, because honestly, why not? Take a look at that. It's very cool. It essentially looks like a welder's mask. Or a sandblasting mask or whatever, with like R2-D2's face or his leg or whatever the hell painted on the front. Got some LEDs in there. They have a throat mic, like bone conduction throat mic type thing. They have it hooked up. It's hooked up to a radio, it looks like, on the back of the guy's head. Heads, I should say. And when you talk, the other person with the other helmet on can hear what you're saying, because you know it's a throat mic going to an earpiece and whatnot on the other radio. But what happens is when your voice, when you start speaking, I've only kind of skimmed through this here, but what happens is a droid voice picks up, so you sound like R2-D2 or BB-8 or whatever the hell other Star Wars droids you can think of here. So it kind of starts talking over, so if you're speaking kind of quietly, if you speak too loud, it's going to hear your voice underneath, you know, like your R2-D2 voice or whatever. But if you speak quietly in the normal voice, you can't really be heard over the droid noises. And of course, because it is a throat microphone with the microphones on your neck, it will not pick up the it will not pick up on the droid noises, even though the speaker's like just a little bit, not that far away from it. It won't pick up on it because it's picking up from what's being resonated through your throat. We all know what those are, throat mics. So take a look at that. Very cool. There's a few videos, a whole bunch of videos on that, actually. And I think that'd be a very cool idea, but it'd be a lot better. I mean, they show a video and you can't, like, see through it. There's a small hole in the middle. It's barely wide enough for both your eyes to see out of, from what I can see in the videos and the pictures and stuff. So it's not really too... I don't want to say realistic, but it's not too practical, I guess, for getting around. I'd say we could probably do something like this and get like an airsoft helmet, whatever style you like, you know, something with a little bit, you know, with eye holes in it so you can see with both your eyes. Do something like that and, you know, whatever one you want, and then do this with that. So that way you got the capability. Maybe take the droid voice off and put something on, a little bit, I don't know, whatever, white noise or something like that, so it sounds like you're speaking in static. That'd be a little bit better, actually, because it would kind of override your voice a little bit better, I would think. But very cool, very interesting. Take a look at that, and again, there's like 3 or 4 videos on there, and a whole bunch of pictures and GIFs and all this other fun stuff. Yeah. But the other cyberpunk kit we have is the Kiesel Mobile VPN Virtual Private Network. Thank you to Exec for this one here. What is it? It's the Kiesel palm-sized wireless VPN box, keeps you secure on the go. Public Wi-Fi hotspots can come in handy, but connecting to one usually means throwing privacy and security out the window. If you put Kiesel's new device in your pocket, you won't have to make that sacrifice. Kiesel is a palm-sized VPN hub. It's a bit like the travel routers made by companies like TP-Link and D-Link, and pretty much every other networking OEM out there. Instead of connecting your devices to a public hotspot, you connect them to Kiesel, which you then connect to the hotspot using a simple mobile app. So that's cool. So it's essentially a bridging a Wi-Fi connection, but it's a VPN. It's firewall, essentially. Not firewall, but, you know, nobody's going to be able to get your shit off of it. Very cool. At the same time, I'm not going to go on that. That is very cool. I'm not sure if it gives a price on this. It says, shows here at the very bottom, since use of Kiesel's VPN functionality requires access to outside services, there is a fee involved. $60 will give you unlimited access for a year. And there's also a free option on that as well. It's a little bit, the free version is slower and doesn't offer the location shifting options that the paid tier does, i.e. probably being able to, if I'm in Canada, I can't pick a Russian or a Brazilian server or a server in a different country, I'll probably suck with a Canadian server. The paid tier does, but the security is every bit as good. So it's the same level of security, it's just you can't bounce your to the different servers. Right now, I'm actually paying $60 a year for VPN service. I can use it on up to 5 devices at a time. And so I can use it on my computer, I can use it on my wife's computer, I can use it on my other computer. I can use it on both of our cell phones at the same time. So 5 users at the same time. And again, I can use it on whatever devices I want. So that's the thing. I have just desktop apps for that. And it's also, what the hell is it? Smartphone apps for it too. So that's very handy. So I could see this being good for if you, I guess you don't want to install VPN software let's say your laptop or something like that for some reason. I'm not sure why exactly. Or maybe you only have Wi-Fi only, so blah, then sure, fine. Cool, go ahead and do this. But other than that, it's VPN though, so it's pretty cool. And it's a pretty sexy looking thing. I'm sure it's probably got some other stuff going on with it too. I would assume. But very, very cool. Take a look at it. Oh, it runs on pure VPN, I guess. And love VPN, what it says down here. Okay, anyways, check that out. I'm assuming it's probably battery powered. Thank you, Exec, for that one again. Rec Media, we have three different things. We have the Get Lost Kit. It's just something I saw on YouTube the other day, yesterday actually. And it's just this guy, he's an older guy, from what I can tell. He has a dog. And he's talking about the kit he carries with him when he goes out hiking and whatnot. He says it's backup stuff. And I was just looking at it, and the thing that really caught me and why I wanted to share this is because of the fact that he uses a lot of low-tech kit. In the beginning of the episode, or the beginning of the video or whatever, he says that other people are saying, hey, why do you carry that, you know, the little tin can, like a, you know, mixed vegetables can or whatever that's been emptied out and labels been taken off it. Why do you use that for your boiling pot or whatever when you're out hiking and stuff? And he's like, well, you know, they're like, well, you try this titanium pot. And he's like, well, you know, they're about the same size or whatever, yeah. But at the same time, the titanium one costs apparently $100, which is way too damn much money that I want to spend on something like that. And at the same time, this thing probably, you know, you gotta think of it like a freaking can of mixed vegetables, whatever size you want, it's probably like 50 cents or a dollar at the most. You get the cheap stuff and just throw it out, give it to your dog or something, I don't know, it's vegetables, right? So, you know, just get that, empty it out, clean it out, put some holes to it, get a wire bale going on for a handle, and do that. And if something happens to it, you know, if you accidentally, like, fall on your pack and you crush it, you know, you're not out $100, you're out 50 cents, and it's recyclable. Whereas titanium, if you fall on and bend it, you're screwed. You know, you could probably bend it back a little bit, but you're more than likely completely screwed on that. You lost $100, and I don't think you can recycle titanium in a normal recycling fashion. Maybe you can. I don't know. I don't know if any recycling companies actually take titanium. But maybe they do. But take a look at that. Very cool. I like he's got a lot of low-tech solutions. For stuff for low drag, or sorry, high drag versus high speed low drag. It's like low speed high drag stuff, but very cool. Anyways, take a look at that. The next one we have was sent in by April Chang. This is the Life Smartphone is what it's called. It's actually a video. It's pretty much, well, if you look at it, it's pretty much what you see every day when you walk around and see people on their phones all day. Very cool. So check that out. It's a few minutes long. And the last thing we have here is the Phoenix Rising promo video. Thank you to Iron Angel for this. And shit, I actually had the thing up. Let me just pop the message that he sent along. I don't know if I believe what he said.
I think he must hate me.
Sorry about this. Give me a quick second, folks. Okay, here we go. He says, "Hey, all Iron Angel here. Here's a secret project that's been keeping me from getting shit done for the past little while. If you like, feel free to put this. So feel free to put it in Rec Media, and I am." So take a look at that. That is actually, see if I can remember what it's about. Phoenix Rising. Da da da. I'm sorry, Iron Angel. I'm completely fucking this up for you. I'm gonna open the video right now. I'll read the little thing here. Phoenix Rising offers the best in fire performance and entertainment. Whether you'd like to book one performer or an entire theatrical production, we will professionally meet all of your entertainment needs. Contact us today. Very cool. It's a 4-minute long video. Fire spinning. I don't know what else to call it. It's actually pretty cool shit. Take a look at that. And I'm assuming that's Iron Angel's little business operation thing there now. Iron Angel, please send me more information so I can actually put this out there and not fuck it up. But thank you for that. And it's up for you. Anyways, that's all for the Rec Media here this week. But again, this is all I have for you this week. Don't worry, we'll be back again next week to make sure that you get the news that you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. Please distribute this media in... Sorry, I'm choking on my own words here. Please distribute this media in any way that you can. A special thanks goes out to Yugo Saki for hosting our episodes, Kevin is a Geek for the use of his Murmur server, and the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have any information that you'd like to send to us, you can reach us at info@newsreel.ca or you can click on the Contact Us tab on our website, which is newsreel.ca. If you like the music in the background, please be sure to check out. I'm honestly not sure because I don't know what to put in the background this week. But that's fine. Our outro music this week is Regret and Testify by Chrome or Crom. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I'm sorry. No problem for this week either. But anyways, so until next time, that's what server said. End of line.
I just want to see you fall in love.